for Bangor today. For some of the images from Sunday at the Chevron Championship in Houston, Nelly Korda going wire to wire for her third career major, 5 shots the eventual margin, that at Memorial Park Golf Course. And here are the upcoming venues for the LPGA Tour's major schedule. Riviera Country Club will host US Women's Open, that's coming up in a little over a month. Hazeltine for the Women's PGA Championship, the Evian Championship at its customary location, and then the Open at Royal Lytham and St. Anne's. Now, Beth Ann Nichols is fresh from the West Coast. She was on site at Riviera earlier this week, and that, of course, the venue, as we said, for the season's second major. Beth Ann, it's good to see you. I'm curious what you made of Nelly Korda's performance over the weekend when she just grabbed that tournament by the throat Thursday and still had it by the throat on Sunday night. Are you seeing something different in Nelly now than you certainly saw last year, but perhaps even in that dominant season of 2024?
Well, you know, it was an interesting mix of her seeming calm and really at peace and happy with where she is in her personal life at the start of the week. You know, she was just so open in her pre-tournament press conference. But then at the same time, you also saw this, I'm going to grab this by the throat mentality. And Angela Stanford, the captain of the Solheim Cup team, said, you know, I watched her play on Thursday and thought, uh-oh, they're in trouble. She said, I've never seen her quite look like that with that kind of edge. I'm not going to leave this property without a trophy. And I think the discipline that she showed throughout the weekend, especially on Sunday, in terms of course management and doing what she had to do to make sure that she played it safe and maintained that lead. You know, it's I can't imagine how difficult it is to have that kind of lead throughout the entire week and maintain it and what that does to you, you know, night after night wearing on you. So, you know, I think this was a huge breakthrough for her in many ways.
Are we on the cusp then, Beth Ann, of a Nelly-Gino rivalry? Are we in the midst of one, or does it feel more like this is the start of another dominant stretch for Nelly where she could win 6, 7, 8 times in a season?
I think it's the latter. You know, I would have said something differently, you know, a few months ago, but, you know, looking at Gino missing another cut in a major, you know, something's, you know, struggling. She said trying to find something with her iron game with her coach flew into Texas ahead of the Chevron. She obviously didn't play in L.A. You know, I think she's still trying to find it, and Nelly has it. And so I think it's a matter of, you know, how big of a year could this be for Nelly Korda? I think she took over that world number one ranking and made a huge statement in Houston.
There's another story you spent some time covering last week in Houston, Beth Ann, around Ina Yoon. Somewhat a controversial story. She'd been banned at the age of 19 from the Korean Tour for admitting to having cheated during a tournament. Now she's been in contention, actually, the last 2 weeks on the LPGA Tour at the Chevron and in LA before that. Is there, in your mind, some kind of statute of limitations on how past conduct should eventually be kind of stricken from the record, or is this just something she's going to have to live with? Because she does seem, you know, willing to face up to it in conversations, at least.
Yeah, you know, she's not going to shake this for the rest of her life. It's always going to follow her. I just think that's the nature of these things. However, I can't think of a situation in which a player has actually been convicted, had a serious ban like this that was 3 years, dropped down to 18 months, and went back to the KLPGA when the ban was lifted and absolutely dominated. And I mean, you know, she was low scoring for the year, money title, 14 top 10 finishes, and then went out and got her LPGA card. And now is, you know, contending in the big moments on the LPGA. And, you know, no one would be surprised if she were to win this year. So, you know, for her to be able to put that behind her, I think of that. That's incredible mental strength right there. I think it's arguably harder to do to go back, you know, on Korean soil and do what she did in 2024 than it is what she's doing now. But since, you know, to my knowledge, this was the first time that she's talked about this and the detail that she did with me on Saturday after the round, which, you know, there's nothing like talking about something of this magnitude on the eve of the final round. You're the biggest round of her life. And you know, she was emotional during our conversation. She certainly regrets what took place. You know, I think she panicked. She was young. You know, she took full responsibility, but she also, I think, got some really bad advice along the way. And so, you know, I walked away honestly thoroughly impressed with how she handled it all.
Were you impressed with Memorial Park, the golf course, the crowds, the feel of the first major? Could this be a place that the LPGA returns to for 10, 20, 30 years going forward?
Well, it certainly looks like that's what they're aiming for as they're building a pond. Redoing the 18th green indicates they hope to be there for a long time. But, you know, it started off slow. There's no question about it. There weren't a lot of people there on Thursday and Friday, and I was concerned. But it definitely built on the weekend. The crowd was a lot younger than I typically see at LPGA events. And by Sunday, it looked pretty good. So, you know, I'm hopeful that, you know, they'll do a lot more marketing ahead of next year's event. I would love to see them do some things with the PGA Tour, like maybe give a discount for joint tickets or, you know, share mailing lists, you know, at the very least market during the Houston Open. But, you know, I think, you know, looking ahead, they're going to obviously put in this permanent pond. I would love to see it named after Amy Alcott. I think it's time for that. I think she deserves it. I also would love to see a section of the pond be contained with actual clear, clean water like we saw at Mission Hills.
Agreed. Yes.
In the plan.
Yes. 100%.
Amy Alcott's Aquatic Center
love
in Houston.
Love it. Love it.
That is a great ring to it.
Despite the successes out there last week, Bethann, Memorial Park does not rise to the level of an iconic venue. You've just left an iconic venue. You were out at Riviera with the U.S. Women's Open. Is being held in the first week of June. How important is it for the national championship to actually be at venues that not only have that iconic status, but a certain familiarity for golf fans who know that this is the kind of golf course that matters?
I mean, I think it's massive. I think this is the way, you know, you grow the game without question. I mean, I listened to Mike Wan up at the front of the room list off the next 10 sites for the U.S. Women's Open. And we're talking about courses like you know, Oakmont, Pebble Beach, Pinehurst No. 2, LACC, Chicago Golf Club, Marion, Shinnecock. And I literally said to the agent sitting in front of me, it hardly feels real. I can't believe it. And when you think about the fact that whoever's going to, you know, be making their debut at Riviera, a lot of young players, amateurs, you know, young pros will be playing in their first U.S. Women's Open. And for the next 10 years, they're not going to know any different. They're just going to roll from one incredible site to the next. And I think, you know, what a wonderful thing, you know, and this is going to be on prime time. A little small thing that's cool, they're going to be having a range tracker, just like you saw at the Masters, where we'll be able to see every shot that every player hits on the range, which, I mean, all the, you know, wonderful folks who are much better analysts than me will have a field day with that. We never get anything like that in the women's game to be able to really tell you how good these players are from a stats data standpoint that people can relate to. You know, I think that USGA is rolling out the red carpet, all kinds of bells and whistles. And we rolled from Riviera right into Bel Air, which is going to be back-to-back, the U.S. Women's Open and the Curtis Cup and back-to-back weeks. I mean, it's just going to be a fabulous fortnight in L.A. and a real showcase of where the women's game is headed.
What do you think is the biggest storyline in advance of the U.S. Women's Open?
I mean, we can't look past Nelly Korda, right? What can she do? I mean, I think... It was so interesting. And during the final round toward the end, I sent a note to Justin Ray, the stats guru. And I said, Justin, when's the last time an American player won her third major? And he said, 2000, Meg Mallon at Du Maurier. And I literally almost fell out of my chair. And then he said, what's more, since 1990, we've only seen American players reach their third major. And Betsy King, Patty Sheehan, Meg Mallon. And we think about those names who are obviously huge icons, heavy hitters, World Golf Hall of Fame members. But we think about how long ago they retired, and it's been a long time. And so for us to wait that long for an American female player to win her third major title, I mean, it's got to be Nelly going into Riviera's. What can she do? How far can she take this? You know, we talk about players trying to win the career Grand Slam on the LPGA, and none of them are American. None of the players who have three different major championships right now are American. So... you know, for Nelly Korda to join that list and get in that conversation and inch closer to the LPGA Hall of Fame. I mean, really, when you think about that, since 2000, 25 years since we've seen an American player reach her third major title, that just says so much. And Mike Wan said to me when I talked to him about that on Monday, he said, you know, this is why when I took this job as USGA CEO, I said one of my prerequisites is we have to start a national program. He called it a crisis in the game, and I think he's absolutely right.
It would be hard to imagine a bigger story heading to Riviera than a woman who's actually her worst finish in five starts this year is a tie for second place. Beth Ann, it's always great to catch up with you. Look forward to doing it again.
Thanks, guys.
All right, stay tuned for more golf today. Coming up next, a great story on the Epson Tour as former college standout Amari Avery earned her first victory on the Epson Tour over the weekend. She joins us next to talk about her golf journey. We're back on golf today as I try to give equal time to USC. That's where Amari Avery played her college golf. Before that, she'd already played on some huge stages in the game, including the 2021 Augusta National Women's Amateur. That same year, she competed in the U.S. Women's Open, and as a sophomore, made the cut at Pebble in the U.S. Women's Open and led the school in stroke average as well. As you can see, decorated college career, played three seasons, five wins, 24 rounds in the 60s, and was a three-time All-American. And here's this. Over the weekend, won the IOA Championship on the Epson Tour over Carla Bernat Escudero for her first career professional victory. Amari becomes the first African-American player to win on tour in a dozen years. And Amari Avery joins us now from Arizona, fresh off her first professional win in California. Congratulations, Amari. Bogey-free final rounds are rare and special. What are you most proud of in getting win number one?
I mean, honestly, I'm just really proud to get it done close to home. I felt like I've been ready for a long time now, and it's nice to see all the pieces come together really close to home in the first week of the West Coast stretch.
This sounds like a ridiculous question to ask a 21-year-old Amari, but are you actually surprised that it took so long to get a professional win? And I ask that only because you've been so successful at every level you played at, and you've been so prominent in our minds for so long.
No, I don't think that's a dumb question at all. Honestly, that's kind of the reason why I left school early. I felt like, you know, I was ready to play professionally, and I felt like I was ready to dominate. And but I also think I just underestimated, you know, the Epson Tour, the LPGA. I mean, every year, I think professional golf gets more and more competitive. And so, yeah, I think I was a little surprised that it's taken me a year and a half to win. But at the same time, you know, I have to always stick to the process and trust that my accomplishments will come in due time.
Well, why do you think this weekend was the time? Was it the venue? Was it how you were playing? You had family, friends at Morongo. I mean, what was the secret sauce in your mind?
I don't know if there's a secret sauce. I think there's been a lot of good things happening over the last 6 to 8 months. And I think I've just been kind of waiting for the pieces to come together, like I said. It was nice to stay at home. It kind of didn't feel like a tournament. It kind of felt like I was just playing golf for four or five hours and then going home to my family and hanging out with my sister. So I think this tournament was just really comfortable for me. And I have a new caddy on the bag this year, and we've been meshing really well. So I think it's just all the pieces came together for me, and golf kind of clicked. And yeah, it was just a good week.
You're obviously in a great position to secure your card for the LPGA Tour next year, Amari. Have you allowed your mind to drift forward to what next year could look like for you?
Honestly, not yet. I mean, of course, you know, at the beginning of the year, I was looking at what I wanted the year to look like for me. And of course, that looks like, you know, getting a card and finishing one on the points list. But no, I think I don't want to get too far ahead of myself. I think I'm kind of just staying in this West Coast stretch. This is my favorite stretch of the year. And this week, it also feels like a home game since I just moved to Arizona. So I think I'm just going to take it one tournament at a time. I've had some good finishes last year on this stretch. So I'm just looking forward to that.
Amari, as Eamon said, you've been in the public eye for such a long time. You and Alexa Pano in the short game back in 2013. You're 7, 8 years old. You've had cameras and expectations and eyeballs on you for such a long time. In what ways has that steeled you and made you tougher and stronger, having all these expectations put in your lap?
Yeah, it's so funny you say that. I just talked to a really good friend of mine yesterday about this. I think it's helped me more than anything, which I feel like is weird to say, but I think being in the spotlight for so long, having cameras around me, like, and always having these expectations, I think I've always raised my expectations for myself as well. So for me, I always kind of feel like it's pedal to the metal with me. I want to be the best. I want to win tournaments, and I like the recognition. I like the attention. So I think I just want to kind of keep that going.
You're also the first player of African-American descent to win on the Epson Tour in a dozen years. Do you want to be an inspirational figure? Do you want young people looking up to you? Do you want to bring more diversity inside the ropes, if at all possible?
Of course, yes. I mean, I feel like that's the ultimate goal. I think it's really cool that Sedina, you know, won multiple times in 2014. And I hate that it's been 12 years now since the last African-American has won on this tour, but I'm hoping this kind of opens up the floodgates for me and for other minority golf as well. But yeah, for me, it's always been about minority golf as a whole, but specifically Black and Filipino golf. I'm obviously a huge advocate for that. I want to see more of us out here, and I'm glad to just, you know, be competing and doing well on all the levels. And I'm hoping that, you know, in these next 3 to 5 years, we'll see a lot more of us out here.
Look forward to watching your journey continue. Amari, congratulations. Have a great week in Arizona.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
It's time now to get a check on the latest PGA Tour University rankings, which provide playing opportunities to the college game's top players. Ben James of Virginia still in that top slot. The player who holds the top slot in these rankings following the conclusion of the NCAA Men's Individual Championship will earn a PGA Tour card. We'll be right back.
We're back on golf today, folks. Last week in the Chevron, remember the Texas Longhorns junior, Farrah O'Keefe, tied for low am honors, finishing at even par, even with a struggle in the last round. She did shoot 68, 69, 72 the first three rounds, and yesterday joined us on golf today to talk about her experience.
That first round 68 you shot at the Chevron, Farrah, it tied the second lowest round in any major ever by an amateur. Were you aware at the time of the scale of what you were actually achieving out there, or were you just kind of working your way through the round like it was any other?
It's so funny. I saw that stat somewhere afterwards. I had no idea. I had an afternoon tea time, so I thought in the morning, you know, that 6 under would be pretty good. So I kind of had the thought of going out there and try to shoot 66. 68 ended up being a little bit higher than what I wanted, but still I didn't realize at the time that it was that big of a deal. You know, I thought I still made a couple of mistakes along the way, which, you know, I'm a perfectionist, and so anytime you make mistakes, it's kind of frustrating. But I was really happy to come off the golf course and be in contention. And then I saw that stat pop up somewhere and I was like, oh, okay, that's pretty incredible.
Delightful interview as we take a look at the watch list for the 2026 Annika Award presented by Stifel, the award given annually to the most outstanding player in women's college golf. And look at this list of players, Kiara Romero, the top ranked collegiate player. There you see Farrah O'Keefe. Wonderful players, Mega Gane, friend of the program. These are fantastic players with a very, very bright future.
And here are some of the candidates for the 2026 Haskins Award presented by Stifel, which is given annually to the Player of the Year in men's college golf. And again, some familiar names on this list as well. We just saw Ben James, who's currently leading PGA Tour University rankings. Jackson Coivin, one of the most talked about young amateur players in the world for quite some time.
Hey folks, are you not at home, maybe traveling or working? No problem. Now you can watch Golf Channel's live tournament news and instructional programming anytime, anywhere. Golf's home is now in your pocket. Wherever you are, download the all-new Golf Channel app today. And today, we started this program by talking about the Wall Street Journal report that LIV Golf will not be funded by the Public Investment Fund, and they'd be informing the staff tomorrow.
Yeah, and this kind of makes official what was reported a couple of weeks ago. Scott O'Neill essentially being told, you're on your own. But let's spare a moment for the willing stooges, the Ian Poulters, the Lee Westwoods, the David Fehertys, the Arlo Whites, who jumped up to say that the reporting that has now proven accurate was all kind of wrong or nonsense. They're just blind drunk on Kool-Aid, but the reality's coming home to hit them now.
It's going to be tough for them to go forward in 2027.